Shalom. Welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, there's news on the subject of the Netanyahu government's freeze on Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. As we all know, since 2009, when Netanyahu and the Likud unfortunately returned to power in Israel, there's been a virtual freeze on Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. This at the same time when the Arab Muslim Nazis have built tens of thousands of homes, buildings, and all types of structures all over the land of Israel illegally, and the Netanyahu government has allowed them to get away with this. And so, we of course have vigorously protested against this anti-Semitic building freeze, which is only in effect against Jews. Only Jews are not allowed to build in their biblical homeland. We have protested against this. We've done many videos against this. We've been pressuring people on this subject. Our Hebrew movement has done everything it can to wake the people of Israel up on this subject. And finally, this week, there's some news. The Netanyahu government announced that they're issuing permits for almost 1,200 new apartment units for Jews in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. Now, this is mostly a bluff, this announcement, for two reasons. Number one, 1,200 units when the Arab Muslim Nazis have been building tens of thousands of units illegally all over the land of Israel? 1,200 units after 4 years of a building freeze? What a joke. That's the first reason why this is a bluff. Because the number 1,200 is a joke. This is ridiculous. They should be building tens of thousands of homes for Jews in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. And the second reason why it's mostly a bluff is because all of the 1,200 units are being built exclusively in what is called settlement clusters. What does that mean, settlement clusters? The Netanyahu regime and prior Israeli governments plan to create a so-called Palestinian state, God forbid, on 95% to 97% of the land in Judea and Samaria. They plan to surrender 95% to 97% of the land. And they plan to keep 3% to 5%. The other 3% to 5% they plan to keep. Why? Because most of the big Jewish settlements are in that 3% to 5%. That 3% to 5% has what is called the settlement clusters, or the concentrated big settlements. More than 2/3 of the settlers live within that 3% to 5%. So Israel will be saying, oh, okay, we're going to be surrendering 95% or 97% of Judea and Samaria, but we're keeping the 3% to 5% that have more than 2/3 of all the Jewish settlers. So we're keeping most of the Jewish settlements. That's going to be the propaganda line they're going to use to convince the people of Israel that this is acceptable. Of course, giving up even one millimeter, even one molecule of the land of Israel is unacceptable, is a terrible sin and a crime against the Jewish people. And giving up 95% to 97% of Judea and Samaria means that Israel will be returning to the pre-1967 borders. Israel will be 6 to 9 miles wide if Israel gives up 95% to 97% of Judea and Samaria. 6 to 9 miles wide. Those are suicidal borders. Completely indefensible borders. And yes, they'll be keeping about 2/3 of the Jewish settlers and expelling the other 1/3 and handing over Israel's biblical heartland, the holiest parts of the land of Israel, to the Arab Muslim Nazi enemy that has promised to destroy the Jewish people. It's complete insanity. But the 1,200 units that the Netanyahu government has announced they're building, all 1,200 are within this 3% to 5%. That they plan to keep in Judea and Samaria. Not a single new unit, not a single new apartment for Jews is being built in the 95% to 97% that they plan to surrender. Which proves that they really are serious about wanting to surrender the 95% to 97% of Judea and Samaria. They are serious about that. They're not building a single Jewish apartment in any of those in any of those areas. And while we're in favor of Jewish building in the 3-5% that they plan to keep, we want more Jewish building there as well. It would be even better, and it's even more essential and more urgent that the building take place in the 95-97% that they're planning to surrender. We want as many Jews as possible, especially in the areas that they want to surrender. Because if we have more Jews in the areas where which they want to surrender, it's more difficult for them to expel those Jews. The more Jews that are there, the more difficult it is for them to surrender that land. And there, they're not building anything. And even in Jerusalem, they're only building it in Jewish neighborhoods which they plan to keep. We're in favor of building in every neighborhood in Jerusalem. We're in favor of it. We favor the building program. But the urgent need now is to build tens of thousands of units throughout all of the area which the PLO Fatah terrorists want to establish a state in, and which the left-wing traitor Israelis, including the Israeli government, would like to give them a state in those areas. That is the area where there's an urgent need to move as many Jews as possible, and no apartments are being built in those areas. But still, the fact that they said they're building these 1,200 units, the fact that they've done this, and they're getting condemned by the United States and by the PLO and by the Europeans and by the world for doing this, the fact that they're doing that, and the fact that they're at least thickening up these areas that are right on the border there, that is something we're in favor of. And they're only doing it because of pressure from the right. Pressure from Jews in Judea and Samaria, pressure from Jews in the Likud, who are complaining about Netanyahu's surrender policies, pressure from Jews who are creating new communities, hilltop communities, and yes, pressure from us, from our movement. I think our videos play somewhat of a role. I don't know how big a role. I don't know. But I think that we create some pressure. I think when we have videos exposing this in Hebrew and in English, and we're constantly putting out videos, and we've done hundreds of videos exposing this, and if you accumulate the number of views we've gotten on these hundreds of videos, you're talking about a very large number of views for a small country like Israel. I think we've added to the pressure. I don't know how much, but I think we've, you know, done our share of adding to the pressure on the Netanyahu government, and so this is their response. We are not satisfied with this response. That's why we just came out immediately with our response, which is a Hebrew and English video again attacking Netanyahu and again attacking his government for bluffing with this. We're going to keep the pressure on. We're not going to stop. We want to demand that Jews on an urgent basis, as many Jews as possible on an urgent basis, be moved into the areas of Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem in order to prevent the creation of a Palestine state anywhere in the land of Israel. That's our demand. Because the creation of a Palestine state is national suicide for Israel. And we have to do everything we can to prevent that. The building of these 1,200 units is also something that creates some friction and tension in the negotiations. And that's good. That's positive. We want friction and tension. We don't want the negotiations to succeed, God forbid. We don't want there to be an agreement, God forbid. That's an agreement for suicide. But, again, we're not satisfied, to say the least. This isn't even 1% of what we would be doing. And so we're going to continue the pressure and continue to speak out. And I do think that we played somewhat of a role. I'm not saying it was a huge role. I'm not saying it was the main role. I don't think it was the main role. I think the main role was played by people in the Likud, and some pressure that Netanyahu's getting in the Likud Central Committee from Likud members who are saying, what the hell are you doing here? What is this? You're giving away the whole country. What's going on here? And pressure from people in Judea and Samaria and other groups. I think most of the pressure came from there. But I do think we added our voice. We added on to it. We helped. And I'm proud of that, and I think we could be proud of that. Again, I don't think we were the main reason for this. But I think we played a little bit of a role in adding to the general pressure on Netanyahu to back off from this insane building freeze. Again, the freeze is still in effect. because there's a freeze on building in the 95 to 97% where they want to create a Palestine state. That freeze is still in effect. So we still have to break that freeze, and we have to still condemn the Netanyahu regime's anti-Semitic policies in that area. And we have to continue to pressure the Jewish Home Party and Likud members and others who claim to be on the right and who are going along with this government's evil policies and anti-Semitic policies of preventing Jews from building in their own homeland. We've got to keep that pressure going, and we've got to keep people's feet to the fire. We can't let people settle for this or be satisfied by this, God forbid. And at least you know with us, we're not going to compromise, and we're not going to settle or be satisfied with, you know, throwing a few crumbs at us like this. At least with us, you know that we're going to continue to demand justice and truth and sane policies for Jewish survival. But I think this episode proves that it is possible to counter the pressure of the Obama administration and the European Union and all the other anti-Semites who've joined with the Muslim world in telling Israel that they have to commit suicide. It is possible to counter their pressure. It is possible to do that. I think this whole episode proves that. And that just shows that we've got to step up our efforts. Are we doing enough? We're not doing anywhere near enough because we don't have a budget big enough to do enough. We're doing the best we can with our limited resources. We are not allowed to be silent. We are not allowed to sit back and apathetically watch as negotiations begin to create a Palestinian state. And there's a very big danger, a real danger, that a state will be created. There's a very big danger that Israel will agree to this, will agree to create a Palestine state. Netanyahu is an extremely weak and pathetic leader. And when Obama and the whole world pressure him and squeeze him, and even the Israeli news media and the traitors in Israel pressure him and squeeze him to agree to this, the chances of him folding and collapsing are very, very real. There's a very real chance of that. God forbid. So Israel is in very serious danger from this. And that's why we've made such a big deal about this and we're so focused on this. This could be the difference between a Holocaust, God forbid, and Jewish survival. So we're not allowed to be silent. We must speak up and we must do everything we can to wake the people of Israel up. And I think we're doing our share, considering our meager budget and our meager resources. I think we're doing our share in trying to do that. And so I wanted to bring you that news, that this is a development that has occurred. This proves that it is possible to have counter pressure. It is possible to little by little try to break that freeze. Unfortunately, we don't have time for little by little. And unfortunately, we're not doing enough fast enough on a wide enough scale. But we're doing the best we can, and we're continuing the fight. And in the past couple of days, you've seen that, you know, you see that the there's one little crack in the freeze now. There's a little crack in the wall. We hope to make that crack bigger and bigger so that more and more Jews will be allowed to move to Israel's biblical homeland. We hope to be able to do that, God willing. Right now, things are not looking good because in a couple of days they're beginning the negotiations again, and Obama and John Kerry are pressuring Israel. And we know how weak Israel is, and we know how Netanyahu always gives in to pressure. So it's a very dangerous situation. This is the time when we need to push as hard as we can to wake the people of Israel up, to speak out, and to stop this insanity. This is the time when we need to do as much as we can. Everything is at stake in preventing this. We've got to prevent this from happening to Israel. And so I want to urge you to help us with our Hebrew and English videos. When we upload Hebrew and English videos, like we did the past couple of days, we've uploaded 2 Hebrew videos and 2 English videos on this very subject. Help us promote the Hebrew and English videos. Even if you don't speak Hebrew, help us with it. Help promote it on YouTube and on Facebook. Like, favorite, comment, mirror, and share. Help us so that our videos will get more exposure in the YouTube and Facebook and Google search engines. And help us promote our Facebook pages and our forums. We get thousands of visitors every week, thousands of new visitors every week on our forums. You can see the statistics on the bottom. people are curious because they see all of our videos and people come and they look at our, they want to see what our forums, they look and they read and, you know, it's human nature not to join right away. That's just how people are. Most people don't join right away. You know, if you do a mailing, a fundraising mailing, for instance, you're lucky if you get a 1% return. That's just human nature, unfortunately. And the same thing is true on forums. But we do have a lot of people who are curious, who come and read what we're writing and who look at what we're writing and who may be influenced by it. And who knows? Maybe it'll make a difference that people are reading and seeing and getting facts and information that they don't see anywhere else. We're trying. We're trying our best. And I think we're obligated to do that. So make our forums and our Facebook pages as interesting as possible. We need posts that are interesting. We need threads that are interesting. We need the same thing on our Facebook pages. Help us with this. And, of course, last but not least, the downfall of the Jabotinsky effort to save the Jews before the Holocaust, and the downfall of the effort to prevent Rabbi Kahana from being banned and eventually murdered, the downfall, the historic tragedy that has prevented the Jewish people from achieving ultimate redemption before the Holocaust, and in the case of Rabbi Kahana, before he was murdered. The downfall and the tragedy was lack of funds in both cases. A lack of funds. And we have that same problem. The really wealthy Jews are not attracted to our message, or they don't. The really, really wealthy Jews, generally speaking, of course there are exceptions, but generally speaking, the really wealthy Jews do not give to us. They give to the UJA and all the self-hating organizations and AIPAC and all the organizations that are doing damage to Israel. We need all the support we can get, every check, every money order, every cash donation mailed to our post office box makes a difference. God bless the great JTFers who are generously on a regular basis supporting us with checks and money orders, cash donations. We need your help more than ever. And if you prefer, if it's more convenient for you and you want to do it with your credit card, you can just go to the donate button on the English main page or on the Hebrew main page. There's a donate button on top on hayamin.org or on jtf.org, and you can click on the donate button and through your credit card very conveniently make a donation that way as well. Thank you for all the great support that you've been giving. We need your help. Let's all get in this together. Help us with the videos. Help us with the forums. Help us financially. Let's work to make a difference here, because this is a critical time, and at least with us, you know we're going to try the best we can. Let's all together try the best we can to make a difference, to save Israel at this critical time. Okay, I wanted to share that news with you, what's going on in Israel, and now we're going to go to our great questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with the great Yamach Shmoda Wiener, who writes, and I quote, "Der Chaim, is Noam Chomsky the ultimate example of a self-hating Jew?" Unquote. Absolutely. Noam Chomsky favors the destruction of Israel. He's met with members of Hezbollah and Hamas and Fatah and every Muslim terrorist organization and supported them and applauded them and favors genocide against his own people. I mean, how could you get more self-hating than that? I mean, he's just a vile, degenerate, miserable Jewish anti-Semite, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, Shem Reshaim Yirkav. May he die of cancer and every other illness under the sun. He's the most despicable individual you could ever know. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Thank you for the important question, Yimach Shmo to Wiener. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, who do you think should run for president in 2016, unquote. Joe, my favorite is Mike Huckabee. He's my favorite because he's an evangelical Christian who believes that the Jews should not give up one inch of the land of Israel. And he says that over and over again. He's been to Israel 20 times. I mean, he is the best friend we have. You know, and I just like him as a leader. I think America would be blessed as well with a leader like that. I just like him as a leader. He's the one I would really like, but I don't think he's going to run, unfortunately. And if he doesn't run, then I mean, we're looking at Ted Cruz. We're looking at other possibilities. We'll see. I want to know more about Ted Cruz, but he's always a possibility for us. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to our friend Antonio Banderas is a sodomite socialist lesbian. Okay, that's an interesting username. And this user writes, and I quote, Chechen Muslim Nazi leader, now this I don't know how to pronounce, but Chechen Muslim Nazi leader Deshokhar Dudayev fought against Russia in the 1990s. Why do Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, and Ukraine have streets named after him? Unquote. Because they hate the Russians. The Latvians, Lithuanians, Estonians, the Poles, the Ukrainians, they hate the Russians. They hate Russia. That's why the Latvians, Lithuanians, Estonians, and Ukrainians all supported the Nazis during the Holocaust. They supported the Nazis during the Holocaust. They hate each other. The Russians hate them. They hate the Russians. They hate each other. Anyway, thank you for the question. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, my parents are discouraging me from joining an Orthodox temple and encouraging me to join the conserved, quote unquote, one. What and how should my response be, unquote? I think your response should be that if you're going to join a Jewish synagogue, you want to join the real thing. The conservative, reform, and reconstructionist assimilationist movements are not Judaism. They themselves say that they don't believe the Torah is from Hashem. They don't believe God gave the Jews the mitzvot and the Torah. They don't believe it's all divinely inspired. In fact, the conservative make their own rules. They get together, they make their own rules every year. They have their conventions and they vote and they decide what the rules are. So it's a man-made religion. That's not Judaism. That's the complete antithesis of Judaism. Judaism believes that God revealed himself to the Jewish people at Sinai and gave us laws in the Torah. Judaism believes that God is a living God who has revealed himself to us and has revealed his will for us through the Torah. People who don't believe in that and who believe that they can get together and make rules so that now they have gay rabbis and gay marriages. The conservative have gay rabbis, gay marriages, and intermarriages, and everything else, every abomination under the sun. I mean, these people violate everything that Judaism stands for. They are the opposite of what Judaism is supposed to stand for. If somebody said to me, either I join a conservative temple or I don't join anything, I would say, then join nothing. It's better than joining a fraud. The conservative temple is a fraud. Either you go to a real synagogue or don't go at all. That would be my opinion. And my response would be, if I want to go to a synagogue, I want to go to a real synagogue that represents real Judaism. The conservative movement is a left-wing, politically correct, assimilationist movement that is not Judaism. It does not represent Judaism. That's what I would say. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan, for the great question. And now we go to our good friend, Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, I got the time, I have the address, thanks for the directions, and I'll be looking forward to meeting you this Thursday, unquote. Chicago Jew, my pleasure, and I do look forward to meeting you. I absolutely do look forward to meeting you. And now we go to our friend Yimach Shmodo Lewinsky, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, who is the greater abomination, the unlamented Helen Thomas, Yimach Shma V'zichra, or her Jewish doppelganger, Madeleine Albright, Yimach Shma V'zichra, unquote. Madeleine Albright is the greater abomination because Helen Thomas is part of the enemy. She supports the, even though she called herself a Christian, she claimed she was a Lebanese Christian or, I don't know, some sort of Arab Christian. But she identified as an Arab. 99% of the Arabs are Muslim. So she was defending the Muslim world and defending the Muslims always. And of course, so she was an evil, ugly, nasty person. And Madeleine Albright looks like her. It's true, they do look like twin sisters. They also look a little bit like they, you know, I'd say they have what I call the Arafat look. They both look like female Arafats. You know, they got the Yasser Arafat look. They're Arafat lookalikes. I would call them the Arafat lookalikes. Madeleine Albright, Helen Thomas, Edwina Koch. You know, Arafat lookalikes. Anyway, Madeleine Albright, though, is the bigger abomination because she is part of the Jewish people, the people that God gave the Torah to, the people that God brought out of the land of Egypt and brought to the land of Israel, and it's supposed to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. And instead, look what a vile, degenerate piece of garbage she is. So, in my opinion, she definitely is the bigger abomination. Thank you, Yimach Shmo Lewinsky. And now we go to our good friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes in Shmuel Bet, chapter 21, King David handed over Jews in Saul's family to the Givonim to be executed. How is this not being a Moser? Unquote. Okay, first of all, Shmuel is Samuel. Shmuel Bet is Samuel 2, Samuel Bet. By the way, the division, the chapter divisions, you know, Samuel 1 and 2, and Kings 1 and 2, and Chronicles 1 and 2, that's a Christian thing. That actually was not in the original Jewish Tanakh. We actually didn't have that division. I mean, it's an example of an influence, of a foreign influence over the Jewish Bible. Just so that you'll know. And I know people don't like hearing it, but it's true. I mean, there was originally Shmuel, the book of Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel, was one book at one time. In any event, yes, King David, and so Binyamin Yisrael asks, how can King David hand over Jews to the Givonim? Givonim are a non-Jewish tribe that lived in Israel, non-Jewish nation that lived in Israel. How can he hand over members of Saul's family to the Givonim to be executed? And he says, isn't this like being a Moser? Moser means someone who hands over, you know, like an informer, which in Judaism is a very serious sin. And the answer is, this is a different situation, Binyamin, and I'll tell you why. There was hunger and starvation in Israel for 3 years when David was king. He didn't understand because David was, of course, the most righteous king ever in Jewish history. And all of a sudden, there's this terrible hunger and starvation in the land of Israel for 3 whole years. So he turned to God repeatedly and asked God to tell him. King David was a prophet, of course, one of the greatest prophets in history. And so he asked God to tell him why this is happening. And Hashem told him that Israel was being punished because Shaul, Saul, unjustly murdered the Givonim. He murdered the Givonim and it was unjust what he did to them. And so Hashem, in effect, ordered David to satisfy the demands of the Givonim, to do whatever the Givonim demanded to rectify this injustice. So even if you want to say that there's a mitzvah not to hand over your fellow Jews, even if you want to say that, we have a concept in Judaism called Hora'at Sha'ah. Hora'at Sha'ah means the order of an hour. In other words, an order, just temporary order that can be given. A prophet can do this. A prophet can say, the Jews all have to violate the Sabbath this particular Shabbat. If a prophet says that, and if he is a genuine prophet, and if the Sanhedrin has told us that this is a real Navi, this is a real prophet, the Jews are required to do what the prophet says. Now, if the prophet says you're supposed to violate the Shabbat or Kashrut or some other mitzvah, if he says you're supposed to do this on a regular basis, you're not supposed to believe him. No prophet can say that he's canceling or changing one of the mitzvot, one of the commandments. That you can never do. But you can have a one-time situation where because of special circumstances, the prophet says, because of this, you have to do A, B, or C at this time, even if it goes against a certain commandment. A prophet can order a change in a commandment temporarily because of circumstances. That's called Hora'at Sha'a, and that's part of Halakha, part of Jewish law. Hora'at Sha'a. And anyone who does not follow what the prophet says when there's Hora'at Sha'a is subject to the death penalty. So it's very serious. We got to do what the prophet says when that happens. In this case, it wasn't a prophet. This case, it's Hashem himself giving David Hora'at Sha'a, giving him Hora'a means, how do you say Hora'a? Instruction, like you're ordering somebody, giving him an order, a temporary order. He's in effect giving him an order and saying, you've got to rectify this injustice. I'm not going to tolerate the injustice you did to the Givonim. I want you to rectify this injustice. And so Hashem himself ordered King David to do this. And so King David went to the Givonim and said, what do you want? And the Givonim said, we want 7 members of Shaul's family. And so David HaMelech, King David, handed over 7 members of Shaul's family to be executed. Now, you got to remember that these members of Shaul's family, that Shaul's family was involved in murdering, not only murdering the Givonim, they also murdered other innocent Jews. They murdered innocent Jews. And they tried to murder David. Shaul many times tried to murder David. So there's no question that this was just. And there's no question that a very, very good argument can be made for why the Jews themselves weren't executing these members of Shaul's family. Because they did things that were abominable when Shaul was king. Shaul was the first king in Israel's history, the first official king. I say official because Moses was like a king and Joshua was like a king. They were all like kings. But officially crowned as a king with land and everything, having an official king, Shaul was the first king. But a lot of terrible things happened at that time. So Hashem ordered King David to take this action. And they did take the action, and the starvation and the hunger that was in Israel, the famine that was in Israel for 3 years ended when King David satisfied the Givonim and there was justice and the land was cleansed of this terrible sin that had been committed by members of Shaul's family. Thank you, Binyamin. I hope that explains it. And now we go to our friend Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, all countries from North Africa, including Iraq, were until the 7th century CE Christian. Is there a chance they'll become Christian again? Unquote. No, I don't believe so. I do not believe Muslim countries are going to become Christian again. Yes, many, many years ago, originally, they were Christian. The countries in North Africa, they were all Christian originally, yes. But will they become Christian again after all of these centuries of Islamic influence? I do not believe that's going to happen, no. I don't believe so. Thank you, Da Vinci. I think they're pretty hopeless, Da Vinci. I think they're hopeless. I mean, that's my opinion. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to the great Gematria, who writes, and I quote, how did Hillary get away calling a former campaign aide an effing Jew, etc.? The Hasids in Neuskwer are anti-Zionist. Doesn't this bother USA Jews? Unquote. Okay, an excellent question, Gematria. Hillary Clinton is a vicious, vicious Jew hater. And she did she did use many anti-Semitic terms against people who weren't even Jewish. I mean, that's a real sign of an obsessive fanatic anti-Semite. She called her former campaign aide, who wasn't Jewish, an effing Jew, you know what. She used to call her husband the big Jew every time she caught him committing adultery. She used to call him a Jew. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Greek people that I used to know who used to call everybody they hated Turkish, because the Greeks and the Turks hate each other. So if there was a Greek woman I knew, and whenever she Whenever this Greek woman hated someone, she would say, oh, he's a Turk. Even if he was a Schwarzer, he's a Turk. Now, she would call them Turkish. That's what it reminds me of. Hillary, everything she doesn't like, she refers to as Jewish. She is such a vicious anti-Semite. And she's such a Muslim. She said she's studying Islam. It's a beautiful religion. She wants us, her and her daughter want to study Islam. And she hired and loves this Huma Abedin Yimach Shma V'Zichra, Anthony the Wiener's wife, Muslim Brotherhood wife. That's her favorite aide. It's like her daughter. She loves her like a daughter. I mean, she is so evil and so anti-Semitic and so anti-Israel. I mean, she would really be a nightmare in the White House. Not that we don't have a nightmare now. We do have a nightmare now. But she would also be a nightmare in the White House. As far as the Hasidim in the New Square who voted for her and the other sick people who voted for her, what can I tell you? I mean, I don't have to tell. Gematria, you're the last person I have to tell that there's no shortage of sick Jews in the world, unfortunately. Thank you, Gematria. And now we go to our friend LKZ, who writes, and I quote, how can liberal clam rights activists justify being against abortion, unquote? A very good question. You have all the people who support clam rights and who support insects and say that you shouldn't be experimenting on insects, even if it'll cure cancer. In the laboratory, experimenting on an insect is inhumane. And by the way, I don't enjoy seeing insects experimented on or animals experimented on, but I think human beings are more important. In my opinion, they're more important. Should we try to avoid hurting animals and insects? Absolutely, we should try. All of God's creatures, we love God's creatures. We love insects and we love animals and because God created them. But, if we could save human lives, that comes first. And these people believe that the rights of animals and the rights of insects come before the right of a human being to survive, these crazy people. Now, and maybe that's why they're pro-abortion, but don't you dare touch an insect. Sick, very sick people. And now LKZ writes, and I quote, would Putin's government be better than Hussein Osama's, unquote? Well, Putin is a KGB, is an old KGB agent. He's a horrible, evil, monstrous dictator, a vicious dictator. Although, I'll say one thing, there's one thing I have to say about him. On the issue of gays and the issue of homosexuality, I have to say that I find myself admiring how Russia seems to be the last sane country in the world in terms of the developed nations. In the third world, a lot of countries don't tolerate this. But Russia seems to be among developed countries, among modern, developed, educated countries, Russia seems to be the last sane country in the world when it comes to the gays. I don't know. It's just, as much as I despise what the Russians have done to the Jewish people and the fact that Russia is so anti-American and all the other terrible aspects of Russia and their drinking and their alcoholism and the vodka and just things that I think are horrific cultural problems. At least on this issue, on the issue of the gays, I find myself admiring them for being politically incorrect and standing up for the truth. On that particular issue, but in general, Putin is actually a vicious Marxist dictator, KGB, all the way. He always was KGB and is a terrible, evil person. Thank you, LKZ, and I don't know if he's better or worse than the Muslim in the White House. They're both horrible. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, what is your opinion on Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee, who voted against Samantha Power's nomination and foreign aid to Egypt, unquote. I don't know how sincere he is, and I don't know, but his positions on Israel seem to be pretty good so far. I mean, I'd like to find out more, but his wife studied at Brigham Young University in Israel. And she spent time in Israel. And he claims to be very pro-Israel. He claims to be a strong supporter of Israel. So, You know, if that's true, if he's sincere, then, you know, that's good. Then that would be good. Thank you, EB. And now we go to our good friend Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Who was Yeshayahu Leibowitz? Comment on him," unquote. Yeshayahu Leibowitz was a self-hating Jewish professor, the worst type of self-hating Jew, who referred to the state of Israel as Judo-Nazi. In other words, he said that the Jews who want he said Israeli Jews are Jewish Nazis because they supposedly mistreat the poor Arab Muslim Nazis. He supported the Arabs and said that the Jews are acting like Nazis. So that in and of itself shows what a sick person, and he claimed to be religious even though he didn't believe in the world to come and didn't believe in a lot of other Jews. I mean, he completely negated Judaism's main tenets and concepts and yet claimed to be a religious Jew and he was a professor. And so, of course, all the left-wing intellectuals and all the self-hating Jews loved him. They adored him. They wanted to give him the Israel Prize, all the left-wing Jews, sick Jew, Judenrat Jews in Israel. By the way, the Jews that Leibowitz associated with, the left-wing Jews he associated with, really do act like Nazis. They actually worked with the Nazis and were in the Judenrat during the Holocaust, people like Kastner. But he wasn't talking about those types of Jews. You know, as usual, everything upside down. His whole worldview is upside down. The real Nazis, he doesn't condemn as Nazis. The Arab Nazis and the Jews who support the Arab Nazis, those people he doesn't call Nazis. Who does he call Nazis? Israeli soldiers or Israelis who defend Israel against the Arab Nazis. If an Israeli Jew defends himself, he calls him, Leibowitz would call him a Nazi. Very, very sick, disgusting person. Thank God that he's in a very warm place right now. He's not among us anymore, Baruch Hashem. And now Tag Mechir writes, "Who are enemies of the Jewish people in order of danger least to greatest?" Unquote. Well, I could just tell you in general. I don't know about giving names. I don't know. There are so many. This is an evil generation. This is a very evil time, evil generation. This is the period of the Geula, when we return to the land of Israel, which we did 65 years ago. That means we are in the period of the Geula and the period of the redemption. And the period of the redemption, the period before the coming of the Mashiach, before the coming of the Messiah, which can be a period that could last decades or it's a period that could last centuries. But that period before the coming of the Mashiach, which is the period we're in now, is going to be a period of unprecedented evil. It doesn't have to be, but it is likely to be. This is what Chazal taught us. And so the greatest enemies of the Jewish people are the leaders of the Jewish people. Unfortunately, the Erev Rav, they are the greatest enemies. That's what the Vilna Gaon said. The Vilna Gaon said to us that the greatest enemies of the Jewish people in the days of redemption will be the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav are the mixed multitude. In other words, the assimilationist, self-hating Jews. Who are the type of people we see in the news media, in Hollywood, in the government, those types of Jews, the billionaires, the owners of these big corporations, the intermarried, people that are ashamed to be Jewish. Those are the worst enemies of the Jewish people. They wind up doing more damage to the Jewish people than all of our external enemies put together. As Rabbi Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, used to say, "We don't have an Arab problem, we have a Jewish problem. If the Jews would get their act together, we could take care of the Arabs. We don't have an Arab problem, we have a Jewish problem." Anyway, thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to our friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, are you concerned about the fact that Senator Ted Cruz's wife, Heidi Nelson, works for Goldman Sachs and used to work for Condoleezza Rice," unquote. "Yes, I am. And someone told me that she's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, or one of these groups, one of these real globalist-type groups, which would make me even more concerned. Yes, I am concerned about that. Goldman Sachs is an evil corporation, and Condoleezza Rice is an evil person and was a terrible Secretary of State. So, you know, or as we used to call her, Congolese Rice. I am concerned about that, and I hope that Ted Cruz is different. You know who I like? Ted Cruz's father seems to be a real old-time Baptist preacher. He's actually a Baptist minister, his father, a pastor from Texas. He's originally from Cuba, but he speaks English very well, and he's a pastor. And he's going around preaching now, and he's, you know, I don't know, if his father is a real Israel-loving evangelical Christian and he influenced Ted Cruz, that would be good news. But I don't know yet. I don't know enough. I'm reserving judgment. I don't know enough. I want to see where Ted Cruz comes out on the issues, and I want to see if we can believe in his sincerity. His wife's history, though, is a matter of concern, yes. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to our great friend Kahana Loyalist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, how did you and Noam Federman meet and begin working together?" Unquote. Great question, Kahana Loyalist. I contacted Noam Federman. I called him up and contacted him. I knew about him. I followed what he was doing in Israel for a long time. And I called him up and contacted him and told him that I want to work with him and that I want to help him in what he's doing. And I haven't been in touch with him, by the way, recently. I haven't spoken to him in several years, actually. But, and there are reasons for that. He's a great Jewish hero, a wonderful Jew. He would make a great Jewish leader. And I have the utmost respect for him. And I contacted him and suggested that we work together. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now I'm just refreshing the page to make sure I don't have any more. Okay, I don't see any more questions here. So I have to check at the end. I always have to remember to check at the end, because sometimes a question or two gets in after I've already finished recording, and it falls through the cracks, and I don't get to answer, you know, the last question, the last two questions. That happens once in a while, which is something I try to avoid. In any event, I certainly enjoyed doing the program this week, and until next week, Shalom.